So welcome everybody at this session on reproducible research. And my name is Hanna Ševčíková from the University of Washington, and I will chair this session. And we are supposed to have five speakers, but one didn't show up, the last one. So we'll see if he comes. And we have a nice mix of speakers. We have speakers from, from academia, from a business, that's the one who didn't show up. We have practitioners from a public agency, consultant. So we will learn different views on the subjects. So every speaker will have 15 minutes, followed by by 3 minutes of discussion. And the first speaker is Ridwin McGuire from New South Wales University of Health.
Hi there. I'm Ridwin McGuire. I guess I should start by just clarifying that I am from the New South Wales Ministry of Health, where the government agency that looks after public health. We look after hospitals, vaccination programs, all of that kind of thing. I'm not an academic. So I want to start with telling you a bit about New South Wales because it affects my problem. And I'm guessing that not a whole lot of you have heard of it. We're a state in Australia. We've got a population of 7.5 million. That's out of about 22 million in Australia. And the land area is about 1.2 times the size of Texas. We're pretty big. We're not big as far as Australian states go. Australian states are really big. Western Australia, that's got to be two or three times as big. So an important administrative grouping is local government areas. These provide a lot of services and they're an important element that people want to manage data on. They want to get health data at a local government range. And I should say, in the Ministry of Health, I work in the open data group. So my job is literally to get epidemiological sound data that protects privacy out to journalists, researchers, students, policymakers, anyone who wants it. We just throw it up on the website. And everyone wants it with local government areas. As you can see, if you're good at counting, there's 153 of them. They range in population size from 1,500. That's Far West, which unsurprisingly is that one out in the Far West. And in land size from 6 kilometres in Sydney, one of the ones in Sydney, to 93,000 kilometres. So there's a lot of difference in the data we can present. The kind of data we're looking at would be things like how many people have gone into hospital for a stent or a heart bypass, what percentage of children were vaccinated, these kind of health and health risk data. We've got about 150 health indicators that we currently present at LGA level. Some of our data sets go back 20 years. So altogether, that's about 2,100 maps that we need to produce. So we needed to kind of step out of the way statisticians usually work with one-off scripts and learn something from computer scientists, be better at automation and reuse. And R is a great tool for that. Why do small area adjustment at all? Why not just put up the raw data? That would be an alternative. Our biggest thing is that if we put up the raw data, the estimates aren't great. If you've got something that happens, like having a heart attack in about 100 out of 100,000 people, and you've got a heap of LGAs with less than 10,000 people, you've got a heap of LGAs that should have only a couple of cases. The noise is going to absolutely dominate the data, and you don't want to be the person who has to wake up to the newspaper article saying 300% change and know that that's 2 cases to 6 cases. So we want some conservatism in there. Because try as we might, journalists do not read credible intervals. And the other thing is that we absolutely have to protect privacy. We are dealing with people's hospital records. We can never be in a situation where someone downloads our map and says, oh, that's Bob. Oh, and it says he's HIV positive. Funny. No. So what did we used to do? We had an unweighted, conditionally autoregressive model of indirectly standardized rates. This model was bad for statistical reasons. This is one of our drivers of change. It was unweighted, so the rate in a really low population LGA was treated as valuable as the rate in a really high population LGA. So we've been able to move away from that. We've been able to say, we've been able to use a Poisson generalized additive model and weight the amount of information we're getting out of each local government area. It was also running on WinBugs, and WinBugs is not ideal for a number of reasons. It's no longer in active development, so it's sitting there as this little fear that if something goes wrong, we don't really have a way out. We're not going to get patches. Our organisation uses server-based R, but to run the SAS macros to run the WinBugs, we had to purchase additional local licenses for all of our analysts. That's an expensive proposition and something we don't want to be doing. As I said, I'm a government agency. I'm actually in a position of standing here and saying, for once, I'm not actually spending your money. Usually when I talk about this, I'm spending your money and I don't want to waste it. But I'm spending people like your money and I don't want to waste that either. And it was consuming to run. It wasn't as automatable as we would like. It still needed someone to sit there and hit more buttons and not do something else than we thought we could get. And the last thing is that it was a black box. We really didn't have a lot of idea of what the model was doing. We kind of had to trust that the numbers we were getting out of it made sense. And because we're doing a lot of these, we can't sort of go into detailed diagnostics. So we needed some really good summary diagnostics that allowed us to have some confidence in what our model was doing. WinBugs wasn't giving us this. Or WinBugs in our current setup, I should say. We looked at a bunch of replacements. OpenBugs would have been the simplest. It is the modern equivalent to WinBugs. It is under development. We could have continued to run it through SAS, which I don't like, but there are some benefits for not moving. Basically, we could spend a week on this list, so I'm not going to, but there are a lot of good options for this kind of issue, and these were the ones we considered. We ended up going with MGCV. It's really efficient. It's got really good geospatialist support, which some things like INLA didn't have the same flexibility to deal with the geographic data in the ways that we had that. And it's got a good way of producing confidence intervals of nonlinear sums. And that is really handy. So the way our model worked, we took a data frame basically with age-specific counts of events, heart attacks, turning up to ED drunk, being vaccinated, whatever the one was. We used a Poisson model with the Markov random field for LGA and a spline for ages. You can then define a directly standardized rate, which is a really, if you don't know what this is, it's a really common epidemiological way to basically remove the effect of age from a rate, because in healthcare settings, age is often incredibly dominating, and so to make comparable rates, you need to make the populations as if they had the same age distribution. And you can define this as a weighted sum of the parameters, which is really handy because it allows us to model on the specifics, and then both for the point estimate and the credible intervals, we are able to just do this as a linear sum, which is great. So some people have heard of growth in the time of debt. This is a side, so I've talked about something where we were kind of forced into reproducibility. There was no way to get around doing good reproducibility if we wanted to actually get all of the stuff we want to get onto the website. But even if you're doing it once, please be reproducible. Growth in the Time of Debt was published by two economists, and it was later withdrawn, Reinhardt and Rogoff, I think. It was later withdrawn when it was found that one of their calculations, which was done in Excel, they didn't drag the formula down the whole length. I suspect a lot of researchers saw this as I did and went, "There for the grace of God go I." which is why I love what R gives you. I use Test That to do unit tests. There are other packages. Unit tests are great. You can prove that each little bit of your code works. After I started using them, I didn't know how I was ever writing code before this. I'm not smart enough to reason about my whole program, but I can reason about these little blocks, and through unit tests, I can know that each section works, so when I stick them together, I can probably trust the output. I can at least be a lot more confident in the output. Packages are great, even if you're not going to CRAN. I would encourage everyone to look at developing packages as a standard, to get those unit tests, to get the vignettes, to know what you're, to have a history of what you're doing. And the last thing I said was that I set out to have no black boxes. I set out to have some visualizations of what our models were doing year on year that was fast to go through. So I'm going to show you these now, and I hope that they will give you an idea of what you can do with understanding models. So here's New South Wales with a a disease before and after smoothing. Now, the grey boxes are ones which are outside of the range. In order to have the same colour code, I found that we had to just remove some extreme values. But if you look at the extreme values that you can see, as well as those colour codes, they're really big areas, and I can tell you that those are really, really small populations. So what we're seeing here is a really good a really comforting to me view. So Greater Sydney, the bottom, which is the big city of about 5 million people, doesn't really change much at all. We've got enough information there that we're not really smoothing. The outliers driven by really small populations are smoothing a bit, which is what we want to see. I don't believe that those extreme values are real. I hope you don't either. But basically, this gives us a really... Is this making reasonable decisions about smoothing in one image? Secondly, we have a pre and post. Basically, ignore the spline. It's just a smooth spline to give an idea of where the bulk is, but it's not weighted, so what it's doing at the ends aren't really relevant. But we note here again, the big dots, which are the big areas, are basically running on XY1. They're not being moved a lot, which again is really reassuring. And we're pulling in those extreme values in very small areas. I've just been given zero, so I'm going to show you very quickly. We have a forest plot, which I didn't put the whole thing on because a forest plot of 153 is quite tall. And we have a plot of the age spline, so we can just look at whether that's converged nicely, whether there are any issues with age. Questions? Reasonably, yes. Yes, come up to me after session. I'll give you my email address and we should talk. Excellent to meet another Australian.
I have another question. Mm-hmm. How do you enforce in the public agency that everybody is on the same page in terms of like writing unit tests, packages, and so on?
I think the short answer is that we don't. With my group, there's a fairly good agreement that this is a good thing that we should do. Otherwise, I think it's just a marketing thing. We have to, you know, I will, when I get back to Australia, I will be giving this talk internally and I'll be focusing it about how everyone should be using this. Yes, I mean you, my colleagues.